Emmanuel Picavet et Paris 1, Panthéon Sorbonne, the title of the speech is Individualistic Model in Collective Norm-Based Regulation, the Positive Normative and Hermeneutic Dimension.
Oui, tout à fait, que le colloque soit dans deux langues. Je me réjouis que le colloque ait lieu dans deux langues, mais je pensais que c'était seulement en anglais, donc je vais suivre des diapositives qui sont principalement anglophones. Je remercie beaucoup Nathalie Bull pour cette invitation généreuse. I thank Nathalie for the generous invitation of a colleague from philosophy. And I am pleased to note that this enduring collaboration between philosophy and sociology is partly the result of Raymond Boudon's very serious involvement in the setup of a graduate school in which philosophy and sociology were closely associated to each other. Okay. So in this contribution, I try to chart the main challenges IM has to face if it must help us get a clear picture of the status of the individual and also the individual-society connection in the field of norm-based social regulation. Legitimacy or acceptability matters have a structuring role in individual choice. For example, it is quite usual to consider that the better the rules are accepted as legitimate. Legitimacy or acceptability matters have a structuring role in individual choice. For example, it is quite usual to consider that the better the rules are accepted as legitimate, the more confident we can be in assuming that they will be followed, ceteris paribus, just because individuals can resist what they are supposed to do, which they do, in fact. Engaging in normative argument in support of social rules would ordinarily be regarded as pointless in ordinary life if this linkage were broken. Thus, a relevant topic in the IM tradition is the investigation of the status of individual reasons as they are hypothesized, modeled, or theoretically framed for the purposes of organization, policy, or collective action. The justificatory schemes in policy and social life more generally are usually based on the use of models, theories, or general representations of social functionings and social mechanisms with a role for individual reasons. For example, in economic policy, using economic models. Or policies of information, using theories about information and communication. The interplay of the positive, normative, and hermeneutic dimensions is quite complex, however. Norm-based regulatory decision-making consists in using norms in collective or public decision-making. Classically, this aims at avoiding an unruly state of affairs or an unruly kind of development over time. Unruly here means that the social world is reputed too distant from a model social world, as it were, which can be approved of. In the generic format, things are as they should be in this or that respect, with should being interpreted in the light of a set of norms. In such a setting, individuals are under focus quite inevitably because their actions have a causal impact on the state of the emergent social world. Their own reasons are involved in the achievements or failures of collective action. Justification and explanation are thus correlated in social practice. Individual conduct provides the linkage, kind of micro-macro linkage, and I insist on this in the paper, the hermeneutic capacities of individuals matter in this. this respect. Organized political collective action, for example in political or administrative action, also in the strategies of major corporate actors, relies on norms. As argued by Wittgenstein, rule following isn't a model to be taken too literally. Idiosyncratic adaptations of rules to contexts, in particular, do have consequences for social analysis, as has been quite well demonstrated by Benedicte Renaud. Norms are often formulated as rules, and relying on the rules, as Livet and Conin explain, consists either in using them with pragmatic goals, for example, coordination purposes, or making normative or axiological statements about states of affairs in a way which impacts the presentation of them, or applying norms or rules which are in fact principles with a quite complex connection to the real world, because just we don't know exactly how to put them in operation. On the one hand, from Plato to Castel de Saint-Pierre and beyond, the ambition of letting a norm-based order emerge through the use of theory and well-chosen assumptions, especially assumptions about motivations, has fostered utopianism and hope. On the other hand, there is a risk of misrepresentation, especially misrepresentation of motivations, individual motivations, which is a common basis for criticism. On the normative side, the individual's conception of what should be done at the individual level isn't necessarily harmonious with the predominant collective view about what the individual should do. So there is a problem of reflexivity. What the individuals are supposed to do on the basis of good reasons which are entertained by the theoretician or by the counselor are not obligatorily aligned with the way individuals think about their own situation. In addition, if the conception of should is determined by enforceable rules, such as legal rules or other socially coercive rules, the individual's determination of one's own correct rule-following behavior might differ from the dominant collective expectations. So individuals might have, deviant ways to look at what it means to abide by the rules. For example, what is the status of exceptional circumstances? What does it mean to let one's own behavior to be controlled for the sake of ascertaining that the rules are effectively enforced and so on? These are quite frequent sources of disharmony between the macro view concerning bringing order in society and the way people inside the society look at their own connection to rules. This can result from the individual's lack of information, but also from the theoretician's oversimplification in the benchmark models which underpin collective rules. It might also follow from interpretative divergence. So there are, in fact, various possible sources for lack of alignment between the individual connection to rules and the way macro models postulate a connection between individuals and rules. And of course, this is a problem when we have the general project of organizing society based on rules, rules which appear to be justified because of a certain picture of individual behavior in society. So I look at this as a kind of challenge for methodological individualism, of course, because this is a problem to do, generic problem to do with individual motivation, and because methodological individualism is one possible source of social models, economic models, political models, models of dialogue, models of social control, and so on, which are used or which can be used for organizing collective action, for trying to change society or trying to preserve society from change, and so on. The very generality of collective guidelines might also be at odds with the sheer singularity or novelty of the context in which individual decision-making occurs, causing ex post facto contrast between actually revealed motivations and predominant views about the way individuals should act, provided that the rules are enforced. And thus, what might be called some kind of interpretative regulation, making use of statements about correct rule following, just like the European Commission does when it issues interpretative guidelines, interpretative documents. Also correct statements about correct contextual interpretation, and so on. All this plays an important part in the management of ambiguity in organizations and in regulation. And I would say that it interacts with the kind of strategic regulation which relies on expectations and the evaluation of risks, which has been described by Gustav Pagliolo. Is it possible to accommodate an individualistic perspective to the necessities of collective guidance in the face of complexity, hardly predictable novelty, and interpretative difficulties? For example, in the religious domain, interpretative difficulties are virtually everywhere. They have a major role in the evolution of religions, but I would say the same applies to politics and political principles, or administration and administrative principles, economic regulation and economic views of efficiency, and so on. Among other things, the policy implications of fragile models are serious collective challenges. Thus, epistemic vulnerability in financial modeling is known to pose a threat to the credibility and effectiveness of financial regulation, as has been explained by Christian Walter, for example. If you look at big bodies of public regulation, like Solvency II for the insurance companies or Basel III for the banks, you quickly realize that a lot of details of regulation depend on economic theories, sometimes also on political theories, theories of dialogue, and so on. And so many fields of even philosophical theories of objectivity and prudence. And so you quickly have the feeling that a lot of kinds of analysis are brought into the field of regulation as a kind of basis for regulation. We have to get a clear mind about prudence, about objectivity, about adequate regulation dialogue and the steps of dialogue, also about financial stability and the indicators for it and so on, the clear economic assessment of risks and so on. So many disciplines are potentially useful. And in fact, we have bodies of contemporary regulation which are highly dependent on quite sophisticated views of human behavior, and also sophisticated views about legitimate beliefs of agents, especially the kind of agents which are of interest for the regulation, for example, bankers or insurance agents. And of course, in the world as it is, this body of knowledge is seriously criticized. It is criticized from everywhere because it is fragile, because it is vulnerable, because there are always counterexamples, because the theories are not as convincing as some theories in the natural sciences, and so on. So we have a kind of extreme dependence of regulatory ventures on representations of individuals and agents. And at the same time, this tends to increase the vulnerability to a kind of criticism which underlines weaknesses in the representations and predictions about individuals, and also about group agents. Taking performative dimensions into account is a bottom line. Realism in the analysis of management styles and habits is another one, probably. So we have some methodological benchmarks, but there is a lot of uncertainty, nonetheless, about modeling strategies and the way to derive regulation strategies from modeling or theoretical strategies. So there is an important cognitive dimension. And the cognitive justification of macro modeling heavily depends on cognitive controversies about what we know about individual cognition in society as it is. The emerging theories of epistemic responsibility, such as the one proposed by Erwan Lamy, the recent issue of the Journal of Business Ethics, refer to the qualities of practices that aim at producing true beliefs. These theories are a component of current research about cognitive virtues in organized settings and the responsibility to foster such cognitive virtues, for example, in the work of Boudouin de Bruyn. From the perspective of methodological individualism, I think it is highly desirable that our models of reasonable social action be somehow founded on detailed normative accounts of appropriate, well-justified individual cognition, if only because individuals look for adequate cognition somehow, and they can be in progress towards the elimination of errors. Epistemic responsibility appears to be an integral component of the defensible use of benchmark models, which play a structural role in the guidance of behavior. The most important cases, for example, in economic policy, it assumes an institutional form. Institutions have their own way to deal with models and to put them into operation in preparing for events and risks. Of course, they do not think in the usual sense. Most of the my thinkers have been very eloquent about this. But they shape collective attitudes with purpose. For example, because they elaborate collective discourse, collective guidelines. Very often we don't know if the collective discourse reflects the real thoughts of anyone. But sometimes, as Jon Elster has once said, words are more important than thoughts, and collective discourse is quite important in institutions because it shapes collective attitudes. And it does so with purpose, because collectively in the institutions we think that certain purposes are serious and are within the scope of institutional action. To account for this, maybe a concept of AI of institutions might be useful. With Christian Walter in our ethics and finance chair, we have advocated this concept of AI of institutions as a complement to classic account of how institutions think, in Mary Douglas' famous terminology. Because we should have a look at the way institutions do prepare themselves for events and elaborate some kind of program for themselves. Interpretation is also an important ingredient in the collective use of models of the individual, especially if we are interested in norm-based regulatory decision-making. The relevant social order is intended to materialize through the actual functionings of the social world and through the rules which are deemed to lead to the desired state of the world. This involves problems of meaning and interpretation. In order to grasp the nature and value of the order which is longed for, individuals need information, and they also need partly shared normative directions which enable them to give significance and legitimacy to the norms and to their own actions. So probably in organized settings, for example, settings for collective regulation, we cannot just have a kind of invisible hand perspective. Sometimes we have, for example, analyze the epistemologists like Bertrand Saint-Sernin, who have been interested in the Manhattan Project, have been struck by the fact that organization was partly based on the fact that individuals in the project did not know what they did not have a clear view about the reasons why they had been hired, okay, and so on. And so also, you know, in networks of spies, in intelligence agencies, it can be useful to not to let individuals know what they do in the network. So, for example, so that they cannot speak about it. But I would say these are quite exceptional examples. And in most contexts, it's quite important for collective regulation that individuals have a reasonably clear mind about collective purposes and the connection between their own reasons to act and collective purposes, institutional purposes. And, for example, it is important for compliance, for obedience, for voluntary obedience. In most contexts, we cannot just rely every time, everywhere, on control and sanctions. We need trust, we need voluntary endorsement of norms, and so we need to be quite interested in this kind of individual collective connection. And of course then we cross interpretation problems. For example, individuals need information about the reasons why an antecedent state of society is deemed to be unsatisfactory. We need also to know how they interpret the fact of being unsatisfactory. The usefulness of collective guidance is probably a challenge rather than a limitation for methodological individualism, provided there exist enforced norms which are supposed to be conducive to the achievement of social collective objectives. It matters that they can be understood and hopefully followed in an appropriate manner in the light of adequate and correctly interpreted principles and values which enable individuals to act in a meaningful way they can explain, and in particular, they can explain to themselves. Thus, there is a significant role to be played by the analysis and explanatory use of a sufficiently rich array of individual reasons, just like in Boudon's third and fourth levels of rationality, cognitive and value-based rationality. In regulatory activities, the difficulties at hand can be understood by the individuals whose behavior is part of the solution in such a way that they can correlate the legitimacy of norms with a sensible explanation of their regulatory benefits. If only for this reason, designers of a solution should care about the society-wide reasons of individuals and adjust to their personal logic somehow. The solution to a regulation problem is tentatively applied in a world where the problematic actions are usually already framed by social or individual rules or institutional rules, and this makes it necessary to investigate the connections between the reasons which play a guiding role in the existing forms of life on the one hand, and the reasons which are attributed to the agents in the benchmark models of their actions with a way which makes sense with respect to the regulation purposes. And this kind of connection is explored in the applied work which has been interested especially in performative effects of theories in regulation, for example, in the work of Mackenzie and Brisset. Okay, I will be come to the last remarks. I would say that there is an increasingly important role of artificial and complex decision-making procedures, artificial conversation devices, abstract or theoretical models used in concrete governance procedures. As a result, the correlation between actual reasons and postulated reasons becomes an increasingly important problematic. So I think I will stop here because it's connected with the future.